Welcome to Get a Grip with Shane Bacon, a production of iHeartRadio. Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Get a Grip podcast. I am Shane Bacon. Hope you guys are having a great week. I am headed to Frisco in a couple days to check out the new golf course there. So excited about that. It's getting a little cold in the Northeast. So about that time of year where you start to plan golf trips elsewhere. This week, great guest, Megan McLaren jumps on the podcast. LET player, dabbles in the States occasionally. He's played on Epson Tour and has been a part of a great scratch series that came out this year about her 2022 season that I will urge you to watch. Gives a great look into professional golf that's not the millionaires making more millions, right? I mean, isn't that what we would like to see, is a little bit more of the real nature of what pro golf is outside of the people that have made it? I mean, we know how good life is when you've made it. Life not as good when you're trying to make it. And I thought Scratch and Megan did a great job of kind of putting that together for a three-part series. We'll put the link to that in our show notes. So if you want to watch the video, check that out. Before we get to Megan, a reminder, we are inching closer and closer to the holiday season. If we're not there already, we have not put up holiday stuff yet. I refuse to do it before the Friday after Thanksgiving. But we can start to think about shopping for the holidays. And I wrote a children's book last year called The Golfer's Zoo. And it is a look into the world that is the golf course beyond, you know, what a golfer might see, which is fairways and greens and bunkers and trouble and out of bounds. This is a little bit more of what kids might see on the golf course, the zoo that is every golf course in the world. Every golf course has animals. This basically dives into that space, and it's great for expecting parents, new parents, parents with young kids. So go to back9press.com/bacon to order it directly from there. We actually have signed copies. I actually think that devalues the book a bit, but they are an option if you're interested in that. And then you can also order it on Amazon if you want to make it a little bit easier on yourself, but I would urge you to go to back9press.com and do it from there. Any support, we appreciate. And just like the podcast, we appreciate you supporting Get a Grip and the Golfer Zoo and my logo company with Kate Smith, Ground Under Repair. A lot of things rolling, and that's exciting. And like this podcast, cannot wait for this guest. Megan McLaren was excellent. I think you guys are going to enjoy it. So let's get to it. Megan McLaren is on the pod now. She's at a hotel in a place in this world that I wish I was at, honestly. I wish I was in, what are you, in Mallorca? Is that right?
Mallorca, yeah. I could pick my laptop up and show you the view from the balcony, but I won't do that too.
Okay, yeah, no, don't rub it in. I was raking leaves this morning for about the 912th time as I see leaves continually falling in the Northeast. What are you doing in that part of the world? You got a golf tournament coming up? Are you playing?
Yeah, the LET has two tournaments left of the season. So we're here in Mallorca this week and then in southern Spain next week for the kind of season finale.
Yeah, I was kind of looking at your results, and it seems like as of late, the game has been more dialed. It seems like you've been playing a lot better over the last couple of months. Anything shifted, changed with your own golf game that you've kind of started to see better results at the end of the year?
Yeah, I mean, we could have a very long conversation about that if you wanted to, but yeah, it's been a really strange year for me, to be honest. I started the year really badly, but last year I felt like I was papering over some cracks a little bit. So I decided to change coach in, I think it was April this year. And that was quite a big deal for me because I'd had the same coach pretty much since I turned pro, so for like 5-6 years. So it's been quite a lot of change, been good change, but obviously putting that into practice in tournaments is another thing altogether. So yeah, the last couple of months I've felt like I've finally started to have a bit of confidence in the whole, you know, the whole thing on the golf course. So it's been enjoyable, been tough, but enjoyable.
Yeah, you're my favorite type of pro athlete. You're almost romantic about the sport. I feel like that can be lost in terms of the athlete. I mean, I've gone to golf tournaments before and asked players who designed the golf course, and, you know, they have no idea. Or, you know, how important is this golf course in terms of the country or the region or the state? And, you know, it's just, I'm showing up, I'm playing golf, I'm moving on to the next. That doesn't feel like who you are. I mean, reading the way you write about the game and watching the Scratch series and you just kind of talking about the game, it feels like it means more to you than just your job. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think a lot of us, you know, maybe it changes for people over time, but a lot of us grow up playing golf as kids, you know, and it's not, we don't start playing golf because we want to do it as a career. I think for most of us, it's not, your parents don't put a club in your hand and go, okay, you're going to make a career out of this, let's go. It's just like, this is a game that we love and we want you to love it too. And if you're good at it, then great. You know, and that's kind of always how it's been for me. Something that you can always get better at, but as you get better, then God knows what else happens, you know, and just like trying to work that out for me is like, feels like my life's mission, you know?
I mean, you grew up in a family that everybody played golf. I was watching the Scratch series that you did. And you were talking about your dad's a 5 and your mom's a 2, which I loved, by the way, because all I could think in my head was that means that, you know, mom's giving dad shots. And I'm sure that, you know, his life goal is like, I don't want to get shots from my wife, which is epic. But I mean, your family played golf. I mean, was this a thing that you got into it at an extremely young age?
Yeah, it was. So I have a younger sister as well. So I think there may have been a spell where my dad had the highest handicap in the family, which he probably will hate me for saying on here. But yeah, when I was a kid, it was just like one of those things that I just did. You know, we went to the golf course after school or in the summer holidays. That was where I went. And, you know, I loved football as well, or soccer for you. And I still do. But it was like those two things were just part of my life from the beginning. So it never felt weird for me.
Can I ask you an off podcast question? I have 3 drinks in front of me. Is this too many drinks? So I've got a smoothie, I've got a water, and I've got a coffee. I just looked over and I was like, this seems like an obnoxious amount of liquids to have in front of you. I mean, what are you working with here?
I have a water and a coffee, and two.
Okay.
In other circumstances, I could have a shake as well. So, you know, I'm fine with that.
I would say that in a world of hydration, that's never an issue for me. I mean, I am drinking water. I'm now doing like you do the powder in the water. James Nitty's has got me on this. So I'm doing this daily. I'm coconut watering now. I mean, it's so weird, the trends that it feels like you go down and then you realize that everybody's either been doing it or is doing it as well. You know, like you can see it in pro sport, but you kind of see it in your lifestyle as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's, you know, it's like, you never know if it's a real benefit or like a mental benefit, but it's like, well, you know, as long as it benefits me somehow, then we're on board.
That's right. When did you get into the writing? Because I find the way you write incredible. I mean, I really enjoy the pieces you put together. I love that you're not scared to throw up, you know, a 200 word basically blog post, if you will, on your website, and then you'll dive a little bit deeper. I think people kind of fear that at times. They feel like it's got to be this, I've got to write 800 words or I've got to write 1,000 words. And some of the stuff that you've posted, especially as of late, it's short and sweet, and it gets to the point, and it's lovely to read. How did you get into that world?
Well, thank you. First of all, I feel like I struggle to keep it short sometimes because I just like, you know, one thought leads you down another and the rest of it. But I kind of drummed the importance of school into me. So I think I always had a thing for like reading and writing. And then I studied English in college. So I think I just went that route of learning self through writing. And I've never been like social or that outgoing or that, you know, I find it difficult to kind of, you know, keep that kind of train of thought going out loud. So for me, if I'm down, I feel like I can express what I really feel inside or what I really want to say. Sometimes it helps me figure things out. Sometimes I just feel there's so much going on in the world all the time that it's like, if you don't try and make sense of it, then you just end up completely lost. So it's, and then, you know, once I started putting it out there, it was really nice to get some feedback and to go, okay, you're not the only one who feels like this, and probably push me to do it a little bit more, which I don't as much lately, but for a few years, it was a kind of really enjoyable part of how I lived my life, I think.
Well, I mean, it feels like an outlet. I mean, in a way where, you know, I mean, the thing about, you know, any profession, especially golf, I mean, you talked about this on the Scratch series about you know, you're never having a consistent caddy in the world that you live in, right? So, I mean, week to week, it's a different person on the bag, and you've got to figure out their mannerisms. They've got to figure out your mannerisms and how you play. Like, that's a real, like, pull and push type of situation. And if you're having a tough day personally, or you're going through something physically, to have that outlet is so tough because you're not surrounded by that support system that maybe golf fans are used to seeing when they're watching, you know, male professional golf, like the PGA Tour. And, you know, you've got agents and caddies and the wives and girlfriends and people like that are out on tour. When that's not the outlet that a professional golfer has, sometimes it's finding a way to turn to something like a website or a blog to at least get those feelings out and to kind of get them off your chest if you have nobody else to bounce them off in that moment.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And there's, you know, there's a couple of people very close to me who I probably share more than they would like me to about, you know, when you have those moments and you're frustrated and you come off the course. And but you're right, like if they're not there in the moment, or if, you know, everybody has their own shit to deal with, like sometimes it's just I need to get something out. And for me, writing is my best expression of it, you know. And even if I never published anything anywhere, like there's a lot of, you know, I think most writers are the same. I have so many notebooks and they are all over the shop.
Oh gosh, my computer looks like the Beautiful Mind type of stuff. Like how many times I've written 2,000 words? It's like, I will never publish this. Nobody find this on my hard drive, please, you know?
Yeah. And it's like the one thing I could do is just write the date. Like every single time I write, if I just wrote the date, at least I would have something to go off. And I can't even manage that. So it's like, you know, when you're looking back, it's like, this could be something from last week, or it could be something from 5 years ago. And I think that's one thing I've learned. And maybe that's why I don't write as much as I used to, is because you end up writing the same stuff all the time. Because particularly in this sport, you learn the same lessons over and over again. And at some point you have to go, okay, have I learned that lesson or not? Like, I need to just get on with things. And I think that's kind of a little bit where I am now, is sometimes you just have to go out there and do it, you know? And like, I still write stuff and I still think about stuff a hell of a lot, but I'm kind of enjoying the putting it into practice part as well.
Well, you made waves a couple of years ago with a tweet about kind of the feeder tour system. I mean, you finished 18th on the Epson Tour money list, I believe. And you said that, you know, without secondary income, sponsors, things like that, you would have lost some $30,000 for the year finishing in the top 20 on the money list. I mean, this is something I've been arguing for and pushing for a long time. The fact that the Epson Tour top 25 doesn't get a LPGA Tour card like you see with Korn Ferry Tour and the PGA Tour. I mean, I had Kate Smith on the podcast a couple of weeks ago. Obviously, I do logo work with Kate for Ground Under Repair. But I mean, Kate had a great year, and you know, you don't really get anything out of that because there's no promotion outside of the top 10. What was the response to the tweet when you sent that out? And I mean, did that lead to any changes or any sponsorship opportunities or anything like that for you personally?
I mean, I don't know if it had a direct impact on sponsorship. I think it was 2021. I played Epson Tour. And maybe it negatively impacted me because I had sponsorship in 21 and the first half of 22, I had nothing. So I was like, okay, cool. And then obviously, lucky enough, Scratch came on board second half of 2022 and Titleist as well. So I'm in a much better place now than I was. But I think I knew before I went and played on Epson that I needed to have something in the bank, like before I started, because I've had a little bit of experience with it and I know what that was like. So I was very lucky to have some support that year. But I did my accounts at the end of the year, and I was telling a couple of people, I think I was telling my sister and my family, like what that loss looked like. And they were shocked, and they know how it works almost better than anybody because they see what I do every day. And I was like, God, well, if they're shocked, then surely like the kind of general golfing public is going to be quite surprised by that as well. And that's the only reason I put it out there, is, you know, everyone thinks you have an agenda. Everyone's like, oh, she's complaining. Like it was her choice to go play the feeder tour, or she's just looking for sponsorship. And I was like, I just think it's interesting. Like I wasn't looking for anything, but I just think people are surprised because they see the top, you know, and there's obviously there's been a lot more information and storytelling out there the last couple of years, which, you know, huge credit to the people who tell those stories. But I still think people have this perception of, oh, you're a professional golfer, you've got a great life, you earn loads of money, you don't really have to worry about anything. And the one caveat I always say is I wouldn't change any of what I do. Like when I went and played Symetra, was Symetra then, for a year, I don't regret it at all, you know, and I would do it again given the situation I was in. But there is a lot more to it than meets the eye. You know, I found it really tough towards the end of that year because it felt like every week I was in a hotel room on my own, walking back down to reception to see if they had a plastic knife and fork for me to eat my, you know, Deliveroo dinner with. And I was like, I can't keep doing this. Like there's more to life than just the grind. You know, like as much as I love golf, there are other ways to do it. And I'm lucky that I've had the experience of another tour that I realized that what I was doing wasn't good for me, like for my mental health, for my actual golf game. Like it wasn't what I needed to, you know, to succeed. So I was lucky I had a way out of it, and I was lucky I got support as well. But it's a lot of people don't have that choice.
Yeah, I mean, to you, the LET is just better for you across the board. I mean, just playing, knowing people, some of the players you grew up with, friends on tour, things like that. That it just makes more sense. I mean, less of those like depressing nights at the hotel where you're eating Chipotle and hoping the you know, the lobby has a fork. I mean, I've been there. I know that feeling. I mean, I mean, you're on the road doing broadcast for weeks on end. It's like, you know, a lot of the time you are just eating your hotel room. And, you know, you're just, you know, hoping the next day's a little bit better. I mean, I feel in a very small way what you're talking about, but LET seems like it's a better path for you.
Yeah. And that's, you know, that's what that year taught me basically was, you know, I had a goal to get my LPGA card. I didn't do it, but I learned a lot of stuff. I learned that I was good enough to win on that tour, which I didn't believe in before that. So there were, you know, there were things that I definitely got out of it, but it definitely made me appreciate that there's more to good golf and being good at golf than just competing week in, week out. Like you do need that support system around you, you know, and we joke about how big the team is, the guys at the top, their coach and their putting coach and their mental coach and their chef and their physio and this, that, and the other. But they have those things for a reason. Like, and if you can afford those things, then absolutely do it because we're all trying to be the best we can be. But you have to, I think you almost have to prioritize and realize like, okay, it's not just about having a coach at the end of the phone or a partner at the end of the phone. Like you need those interactions in person because otherwise, you know, I think professional sport is about sacrifice, but you have to find the balance between sacrificing what you need to and not giving too much of yourself away, I guess.
I was thinking about you and your career, and I mean, you're a stud amateur, you know, one of the best amateurs in the country. And, you know, you kind of think about the male equivalent of that, right? You think about a Rory or a Victor, somebody like that, who's a European player who has a ton of success early. And it feels like it's just expected to gravitate towards the US, right? I mean, if it's not college, it's turning pro and trying to play out on the PGA Tour. And you set up shop in America. And I was actually thinking not just about LET players or Epson Tour, but even some of the LPGA Tour stars, if you will, that are European, tend to still gravitate towards Europe. You know, they still live, you know, in Europe, and they still play a decent amount of golf on the LET. And I'm assuming a lot of that is financial. It's just simply you can't move your whole world to America, you know, because that costs a lot of money and you want to get that here. But there's also got to be a level of that comfort, like you're talking about, where at the end of the day, what are you looking for, right? What do you want to do? Where do you want to play? Who do you want to be around? And it feels like the pull on the female side of professional golf is still almost like what it was maybe in the 90s with the European Tour, where a lot of the male European tour golfers would still play the majority of their golf in Europe.
I think that's a difficult one. It's probably a bit of a mixed bag because you certainly have, I'd say the best players still or gravitate to the LPGA because it's where more money is. It's where more world ranking points are, probably more importantly. It's where the pathways are. But I do think a lot of them, given the choice, like if you picked up the LPGA and put it in Europe, a lot of them would want to play it there because, like you said, the comfort level. And it is, you know, a lot of us grow up wanting to be the best player in the world, especially if you have a good amateur career. But, you know, the older you get, the more you realize there's more important things. And it's also, can you be the best version of yourself if you take away some of those comforts? And that's like this strange dynamic that I think you fight with the older you get is, okay, I want to be the best I can be. That probably means playing against the best players in the world. But if that means removing myself from the things I get enjoyment out of, like seeing my family or going to watch my football team, you know, every few weeks, then can I be the best version of myself, you know? And it's this kind of wrestling match that you're always kind of pulled between. And again, don't get me wrong, I'm incredibly lucky to have those things to kind of wrestle with. But I do think there's, of course, there's more to it than just where's the best golf course, where's, you know, where's the best field this week.
And also, I think time zones don't get talked enough about. So I have two little kids now. I mean, if we live on the East Coast, okay, if I'm in California working or Arizona, it is kind of hard to get aligned with the family. I mean, you're talking 3-4 hour difference, right? And if your family's in Europe and you're playing stateside or you're playing West Coast, it's you're basically in a completely different situation in terms of what's going on in their life versus your life. I mean, you're trying to find like about a 3 hour window to FaceTime or to call somebody. And if you don't hit that window, they're going to bed when you're getting rocking and rolling or vice versa. And I feel like even with all of the technology out there, FaceTime and email and texting and all those things, still just the ability to communicate with people like in real time can get lost with the time zone thing. And I've experienced that as of late when I go away from the family and I want to talk to my kids and I know that either they're going to bed, they're asleep, or they're not up yet.
Yeah, absolutely. And it, you know, it might be one of the reasons I've written more, like when I'm on my own, you know, even if it's, I might be with other people, but it's in the middle of the night, because like you said, it's communication is that's what you need when you have all these thoughts, like you need to be able to communicate with people. And I found the same thing. If I'm on the West Coast of America, like as enjoyable a place as the West Coast of America can be, like I feel so, so isolated. And it was, you know, that's what I found whenever I played the Epson Tour was, you know, you go out, you play a round of golf, you might finish badly and nobody's there for you to just have a little vent to.
Totally. Like you want to text your dad or something, yeah. Right? I mean, just anybody, just, is there anybody out there that'll hear what I have to say? And yeah, you know, they're asleep, right?
And you can't, you know, you can do it a little bit with other players, but you know, everybody's got their own stuff and you don't want to be that person that's like, oh, if I could putt, I would have shot 65 today. And then you find out they shot 76 and it's like, no, you don't want to go down that route. But it is, you know, you potentially have to go 12 or 15 hours without that communication. And if you're doing that week in, week out, you can fall down quite a dark hole before you even know what's happened. You know, it's just a lot of internalization, which isn't healthy for anybody.
How did the Scratch series come about? We'll link to it in the notes on the podcast, but I really enjoyed watching it. I thought it was, you know, I love when you get a look into the real world of professional golf. That's not just, you know, the private jets and all those things, like getting a feel for what pro golf looks like for 98% of people that played pro. Like I played mini tour golf back in my day, not romantic. It's not sexy. Like I don't get, you know, tables at restaurants. I mean, you know, you, like you said, you're eating a lot of dinners in places that aren't that exciting. And this was a look into that. And I thought it was a great look into it. How did that series come about?
Yeah, it was actually, you know, the Jazzy Golfer, Jasmine?
Yes.
You've probably seen a lot of her stuff. So she and I sort of struck up a friendship years and years ago. We just met through golf. And I remember having a conversation with her one day about, you know, the fact that women's golf needed to be showcased more, like the LET and kind of the reality for players on there who are trying to kind of make it to the next level. We had this whole conversation about it. And I was like, you know, that would be a great idea for somebody to come along and do some sort of insight into that. But I don't really know how it would work. And then that was it. Nothing came of it. And then honestly, like a year or 2 years later, I was sat in an airport somewhere and I get a call from Jasmine. And she's like, oh, remember that conversation we had about women's golf? And I was like, no, like we have a lot of conversations about women's golf. We've got no idea which one is. And she was like, oh, well, you know, I've had a partnership with Scratch for however long. And I kind of pitched this idea to them and they were all for it. So that's basically how it happened. She should take a lot of credit for initiating it. But Scratch have been incredible ever since they got on board, just with, you know, we all have ideas, but actually putting them into motion is something else altogether. And it's been really cool for me to see how they've kind of managed to get the balance of both of those things in, of, you know, women's golf and what the LET is like, and also my own personal kind of journey with going to Q Series and kind of doing things maybe slightly scattered. It's not really been like a very clear pathway in my career. It's been a bit all over the place, and the way they've managed to portray that, I think, has been really, really cool.
Yeah, I was really impressed with the whole series. I thought the second episode, you opened fresh off the miscut, I think, at the Evian. And
yeah,
I did this podcast with Max Homa for a couple of years, and I remember Max, you know, it was always the hardest when it was a bad couple of weeks, right? And you had to come on the podcast and talk about the negative and talk about what didn't work out. It's easy to talk about the wins, right? I mean, it's easy to talk about the victories and when you had a great week and what went well. It's not so easy when you've got to dive into the stuff that didn't go well. I mean, this is like, you know, you're sitting on the therapist couch, right? And you kind of are like, you know, opening up about what's actually happening in your world. And that second episode opens, and I mean, I could tell it looked like your laptop or your iPhone recording you talking about, you know, missing a cut at a major where I know you were so excited to play in it. How did you handle giving that inside look into the world, into your career, when it wasn't the week you'd hoped for?
Yeah, it was really hard, to be honest. And I think these things are so difficult when you haven't had a chance to maybe put them in perspective yet, because I can look back on that week now and go, you know, XYZ, like, it's growth opportunity, like, this is what I learned, this is what I know I didn't do well, and all the rest of it. But when you're actually in the moment and you haven't had, you know, a week or even a couple more tournaments or whatever to just process a little bit all of your kind of darkest thoughts about it, you know, and some weeks are darker than others. Like, sometimes you can brush off a missed cut because you know you're in the middle of something. Other weeks it turns into a much bigger story, you know, you're connecting it with something that happened a year ago or 2 years ago. But these are things that go through our heads sometimes, you know. So even like, I actually remember talking to my therapist / performance coach about this. It was I missed the cut in the Scottish Open this year, and I spoke to her immediately afterwards, and I was like, I know it's stupid, but I'm connecting this to the Scottish Open from last year and the Scottish Open from the year before that. And that turns into this big story about, you know, I'm not good enough to compete in the bigger events, when the reality is this specific thing happened this week, the end, you know. But we have so many little stories that happen over the course of our career that you can always connect one bad thing to another bad thing, even if you shouldn't.
Yeah, I mean, the everyday golfer at his home course, right? And, you know, he hit it left on the 14th hole one time. And, you know, for the foreseeable future, every time he gets on 14, he misses it right because he's scared of left. You know, I mean, it's our crazy golf brains that at times, like you said, attach themselves to things they should attach themselves to, or build up something that isn't that big of a deal, right? Like you said, you missed the cut at the Scottish Open. You had a couple bad days of golf, right? But for you, because maybe you missed the cut the last time you played the Scottish Open, somehow those things correlate when they shouldn't correlate. Really, they're almost individualized kind of floating atoms, but we in our brains go, oh my God, now I got to make the cut next year at the Scottish Open. And all that's going to do is make it harder to make the cut. I mean, I deal with this stuff all the time mentally on the golf course. And I've been trying, as I've gotten older, to find that release ability, I guess you could say, to kind of let the stuff go and let it live by itself in its own island, but not a lot easier said than done, for sure.
I'm quite analytical and reflective and stuff by nature, so it's hard for me sometimes to know when enough is enough, because I know that analyzing and reflecting helps lead me to the, you know, to the answers and the solutions. But you have to be very careful how you do that, because Otherwise, like I said, the black hole comes and swallows you up.
So you mentioned the Epson Tour year maybe not being the best in terms of your mental health, but there are some positives about America. I mean, not a ton of them, but I'll give my country a little bit of positives. What's something you miss a lot about the States that you maybe experienced or enjoyed when you were kind of going through a full season over here?
I think the people are very, very welcoming. Like all these remote places that we go to play tournaments that I would never visit for any other reason other than to play a golf tournament. Like it's quite extraordinary how people just welcome you into their homes, like get really excited about you playing a golf tournament there and follow your careers for like the rest of their lives.
Right, totally.
I just find that such a cool thing. And the tournament that I won that year, the people that I stayed with that week I actually played that tournament the last time I played the Symetra Tour, which was like 5 years ago. And they had come over to the house that I was staying at for like a barbecue. And so, I mean, I'm segueing a bit here, but my mum runs a business running golf tours for Americans coming over to the UK to play golf. So we got chatting about that night at dinner. And he ended up coming, like using my mum's company to come and play golf in the UK. So then whenever I came back to that tournament, when I won, you know, they were like, come stay with us. Like, we can't wait to see your mum next year, like all these things. And it's such a cool, like, how else would you ever form those connections, you know? And Americans are the best at doing that from my experience.
Yeah, Megan, I grew up in a small town in East Texas, like 20,000 people, very country, very rural. I mean, it's not a place you would ever visit in a million years. Like you said, if you were, you know, coming over to the States to see America, right? We had exchange students that would stay with us. And as I got older, you know, when I'm 11 years old, I don't know anything different than the town I grew up in. But as I got a little bit older, all I could think of was, like we had an exchange student from South Africa, one from Belgium, one from Denmark. And I kept thinking to myself, as I got a little bit older and had seen a little bit more of the world, could you imagine getting on an airplane, flying to the United States of America, being thinking in your head, New York City and Las Vegas and San Francisco and LA, and ending up in this town? But again, beautiful people, right? I mean, welcoming, nice. I mean, the high school takes you in the right way. And so, you know, there are maybe some negatives about having to spend 6 months of your high school years in Marshall, Texas, but at the same time, you get to experience the people that you're talking about.
Yeah. And, you know, again, as you get older, you kind of realize that that's the important bit, isn't it? Like,
exactly.
Yeah, it's cool. It's cool going to New York City and it's cool looking at the sunset over, you know, San Diego or whatever, but it's the people that you share those memories with that actually matter the most.
What is your mom's company? What is the company that she runs? What's it called?
It's called Exclusive Golf Tours.
And it does UK, England, specific Scotland. Does it do everything?
Yes, mainly. So it's UK and Ireland. So her and my dad live in Northern Ireland at Portrush. So it's, I mean,
nice.
If anybody wants to go there, you know, there's a pretty long waiting list. But but yeah, kind of the typical, like, you know, American golf trip to go and play all the famous links courses. She just helps organize the whole thing. So it's a pretty cool gig, to be honest.
Well, I mean, and pro golfers, for the most part, don't always play the kind of, you know, sought after golf courses because they're always playing tournament golf. I'm assuming through this business and those relationships, you've probably had a chance to play most of them.
I should put that to my mom, actually. Why haven't you taken me on all these trips?
Yeah, you need to go on a trip.
Exactly.
Come on, add me to the list. If they've got 11, I'll be the 12th.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I've been lucky enough to play some of the very famous links courses. But to be fair, the RNA are kind of putting us up on the open rota for the women is kind of getting better and better. So we've played some good ones the last few years. Muirfield and Troon are kind of two standouts for me.
Yeah, the shout out to the RNA and the USGA and honestly the PGA of America. I mean, the fact that, you know, I don't want to besmirch any golf course 10, 15 years ago that were a part of these golf events, but to see where we're at now and where we're going in terms of major championships, I mean, it was eye-opening this year for me personally, just to see the players' response at Pebble Beach, you know, just to see what players were saying about a U.S. Open at Pebble Beach on the women's side. And I, you know, I guess maybe I didn't think about it, or it never kind of hit me in the right way that this has never happened before. But to see that level of respect for the golf course and what a championship means at a place like that. And then you obviously think about Muirfield and what Muirfield had been in the past to be welcoming the best women in the world. I remember years ago, I caddied for a friend of mine on the LPGA tour down in Australia at the Australian Open at Royal Melbourne. And I remember I was probably 25 at the time. I didn't know much about anything. I mean, I barely know much now, but I remember walking into the gate and just feeling, you know, the sense of history that comes with that golf course and what it means to golf, and it being so welcoming to the women's side of golf was really cool for me at the time. And then as I got older, I understood more and more of it. What's something else you feel like could be adjusted, changed, helped in terms of women's golf, especially professional women's golf, that you see maybe happening in the next decade, another change that would be so big for the game? I mean, I know you could probably go like 2 hours on this, but I figured you at least have a couple of things there.
Yeah, I was going to say, where do I start? No, my first answer would be TV coverage. And, you know, there's been a lot of talk about that in the men's game as well. But I think there's a massive disservice done to women's golf with the coverage that currently exists in terms of, you know, whether it's, I mean, things were good at Pebble Beach, but there was quite a lot of talk of the Solheim Cup, obviously, kind of maybe not showing the true reflection of what was going on in terms of the stature of the whole thing, the level of play that was going on, the closeness of the competition. Like, I just think, you know, I want to be careful what I say, because I know the people who are involved in these things do their best with what they have. But at the same time, I think people maybe don't always realize that, you know, TV is how people consume the product more so than going to watch in person.
The only way. It's the only way that 98% of golf fans can see golf is through the television product. I mean, as awesome as digital series are and blog posts and tweets and Instagrams, majority of golf fans are going to watch golf through the television still. And to your point, and you know what, Megan, I think, I mean, you're smart enough to know this. I mean, I think that as easy it is to say, let's do a better job with the broadcast. And I definitely think that, you know, every network is not, you know, they don't need allow a pass, but what we've seen work well is sponsorship money and brands coming aboard and saying, we're taking on this endeavor, right? Let's throw money wherever we need to throw the money so that the product is better and it's shown better and there's more opportunity and there's more camera views. And what do you need, insert network name, to make it better so that the Solheim Cup or the LET or the LPGA Tour, whatever the case may be, can be better? Because I couldn't agree with you more on this. It can improve and it should improve. And golf is an expensive sport to show on TV, but I feel like it's almost up to a brand to come on board and saying, this is our goal is just to simply make the broadcast better. And we're going to throw money at that to do so.
Yeah. And there's enough people out there to know what needs to change. You know, you only have to open Twitter on Sunday of a golf tournament to know what fans want to see. Like, it's not that complicated. I get that it involves a lot of money, but if you're choosing where to put the money, you can sort this out, you know. And it was one of my gripes for a long time when people talk about women's golf not getting more investment is, you know, they'll say, well, nobody wants to watch the product. It's like, okay, but if you picked up, it's hard to kind of explain it, but I guess if you picked up a men's golf tournament and the TV product that exists for that golf tournament and you replaced it with the women's field, more people would watch. Like, it's not just what's happening on the golf course in terms of the female players and the level of golf that they're producing. It's the way the whole thing is presented to the viewer. There is such a huge difference between how that exists and how men's golf tournaments exist. And it's getting better, you know, but you can't compare the two things. You can't say less people watch women's golf, because it is not that simple. Like, if you know, it's the same with any television product in the world. Like, if you put more money into the product, more people will watch it. It doesn't actually matter what, you know, what the actual product is in that regard, if you know what I mean.
Well, I think for so long, we as a society thought there was this big gap in terms of the interest in the PGA Tour, let's say, versus the LPGA Tour. And I think what we're learning is that gap is a lot smaller than maybe we thought it would be, right? I mean, I think if, to your point, if women's golf is presented in a proper way, the numbers that are going to follow that are going to be pretty similar to that of the PGA Tour and to men's golf, because A, it's interesting. B, it's, and I don't want to say relatable because I think that term gets people in trouble, but I think in terms of just straight up numbers, I mean, average golfers don't understand 340 off the tee. You know, I mean, that just doesn't make sense to them, right? I mean, that's like trying to make sense of Tyreek Hill. Like, what does he run? It's like, I don't know, man. That guy runs in a way that most of us are will never and can never understand. But the relatability, just in simple terms of like numbers, distance, and then being impressed of how good they are. I mean, I caddied, was it I think it was my Azota was in our group one time. Mm-hmm. And again, I was in my mid 20s. She had to have had 7 head covers in the bag, okay? You know, out of 14 clubs. And I was watching her hit these hybrids to 5 feet all day. And it was like one of the most impressive things I'd ever seen in my life on a golf course, you know, because to me, a hybrid is a club I'm trying to get close to a green. And for her, a hybrid was a club that she was expecting to hit inside of 10 feet. And I think that was, again, 15 years ago, a takeaway of mine was, this is something more people need to see, because this is unbelievable what she's able to do with this golf club. And I couldn't agree with you more in terms of, you know, at least giving people the opportunity to see if they're into it or not.
Yeah, unless if you don't like it, you don't like it. Like, I'm not going to argue with you then, but I think you're right. Like, there are very few people I've spoken to who say, I've been to a women's golf tournament and now I don't ever want to watch one ever again. Like, if you're, the way I see it, if you're a fan of the men's game, there isn't a logical reason why you wouldn't be a fan of the women's game. It doesn't stack up.
I mean, I know the comp has happened a lot, but it's tennis, right? I mean, my wife and I went to the US Open this year. Alcaraz was playing the late match. Madison Keys was on court when we got there. It was incredible, right? I mean, it was so awesome to watch. It was a great match. She was playing great. And there was no, you didn't feel some super big letdown or this enormous uproar when it went from the women's side to the men's side, because it was just awesome tennis, right? I mean, you're there because you're a tennis fan in theory, and you're going to love watching a great match no matter who's on the court. And I think what's a nice thing about, you know, the fact that we've kind of advanced at least a little bit in certain ways in our society, especially in this country, is I think people are understanding that more now than they have before. And I think that, to your point, now it's somebody else's job to give more opportunity to the product that maybe people are starting to realize they will like if they see it more.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think that's the next step. And I just hope that people kind of see that and somebody bites the bullet and puts the money there, because I think they'll get a good return on it. They just have to do it.
What's next for you? I mean, you've got golf left this year. You know, what is kind of your schedule look like at the end of 23 and 24?
Yeah, it's so I have these two events the next 2 weeks and kind of take a bit of stock after that, see where I think I am, especially in the context of where I started this year, because I really feel like I've kind of maybe changed more than I ever have in a single year of my career. So kind of just make sure I know where I'm at with all of those things and just put a plan together for next year, really, because I feel better than I ever have done. And I think because I feel like I've built a much more stable foundation than I ever have before. So it's just now kind of taking stock again and going, okay, this is what I think I can do next. It's almost like starting again a little bit, but hopefully from a better place.
How awesome is it to travel Europe for your job? I've always been jealous of like the LET and the European Tour, even the Challenge Tour. I mean, given life again, I think in my 20s, I would have just gone over and tried to chase it there.
Yeah, I mean, it's never too late, but it's...
I don't know, I just turned 40. I think it's...
Playing in America for a year made me appreciate what Europe has to offer, definitely. And it's strange because obviously you have the language barrier, but just like the way the culture is kind of similar but different at the same time, and just like the landscapes that you see, it's hard to beat it, to be honest.
How many languages do you speak? Are you fluent in anything besides English?
I wish I was, but no.
Me neither.
I can ask for a coffee in about 3 different languages, but that's as far as it goes.
By the way, I was going to ask you, I mean, what is it, about 7 p.m. your time or 8 p.m. and you're having a coffee? This is like, you're, again, speaking of my soul, that is right up my alley. I'm very, very impressed. Is that decaf? Or are you one of those people that can take down a coffee at 7 p.m. and still be good to go?
Yeah, I can usually be good to go. The only time I stop myself is if I have an early tea time in a tournament. If it gets to 7 o'clock and I'm like, I really fancy a coffee, I try to tell myself that that's a mistake, but life's too short to not enjoy things, you know. I've learned that.
Especially the stuff you like, you know. I mean, we get told, like I said off the top, we get told so many things we can't have or we can't eat or you need to avoid doing this. Like, coffee is one of the great joys in life. And I drink too much of it, but I'm okay with it, you know.
Yes, I always, people ask me how much I spend on coffee a year. And I'm like, well, it's still less than you spend on alcohol. So I think I'm doing fine.
So are you not a drinker? Do you not drink?
I mean, actually, I say that some people will know that I spend like in one night what people spend on, you know, over the course of a month or a year. But no, I don't drink very often because I think it's too dangerous when I do.
Yeah, I mean, and also like the drinking thing, I mean, pro golfers know this, but the drinking thing is kind of like that Sunday night, Monday situation. Because I mean, obviously you've got to be dialed, you know, once the tournaments begin and when you're going through practice rounds and things like that. Those nights suck to drink on. Like Monday night's no fun. I mean, granted, you might be out with other players, but that's not like an exciting night to be out on the town. You know, most places are closed. It's pretty sleepy. It's like, I'm good. I'll just move on to the next place.
Yeah, this is why golf is such a strange world to live in, because you're never on the rest of the world's schedule, you know. It's, you don't go out on a Friday night like they all do, unless you've missed the cut, in which case you're probably not very good company anyway.
Yeah, you know, that's not what you're going to want to drink. You're like, I don't want to spend more money, for goodness sakes, I didn't make a check.
Exactly.
Are you going to do more with Scratch? Is there any more play for some more series stuff or any more video series? I mean, I thought it was extremely enjoyable. I mean, the ups and downs and kind of the real look into life. Is there more on the docket potentially?
Well, I hope so. I mean, we're kind of done with this series that's been released now. But yeah, I hope they want to do some more, because there's obviously always stories out there to tell. And I think women's golf is only going from strength to strength, really. So I think there'll be plenty more to watch out for, and more names that kind of, you know, fans will get to know. So I look forward to it.
Can you tell people where to follow you, your website, all that good stuff?
Yeah, use pretty much Twitter and Instagram. It's Meg_McLaren. And my blog or website is, I think it's just megmclaren.com or .co.uk. But you can find it through my Twitter and Instagram. So yeah, go have a look if you want.
Yeah, your Twitter's pretty pro football. Is it Arsenal? Is that what you're into?
It's Newcastle.
Newcastle, that's right. That's right. Yeah, I was scrolling through today and I was like, man, I'm kind of watching a few soccer highlights. I wouldn't expect them to kind of get into this. It's fun.
Things have changed as a Newcastle fan over the last few years. So it's another exciting one to be part of.
Well, good. Well, good. Well, good chatting with you. Good luck this week. Good luck the rest of the year. I'd love to catch up with you at some point in 24. So once we figure out what the schedule looks like, we'll find the day.
That sounds great. Thanks so much, Shane. Appreciate being on.
A big thanks to Megan for her time, rooting for her, not just at the end of this year in Spain and what LET has left on the schedule, but as we approach 2024, I know she's had kind of a strange season, so excited to see what the end of this year and then the start of next year looks like for her. Since you've listened this long, I mentioned off the top and throughout the podcast that Megan has a series with Scratch. I also have a series with Scratch that we put out this year about looping and caddying, and we focused on the state of Wisconsin. We will link that in the notes as well. 3-part series. Thought it was a lot of fun. Think you guys will like that, so check that out, and we will be back next week.